AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we really dive into the political and financial deep end of our sources today, we just have to acknowledge this amazing moment, just incredible stamina, really. World Series Game 3. Tie the record, right? Longest game ever by innings.
Yeah, 18 innings, almost 7 hours. Finished at what? Nearly 3 a.m. Toronto time?
Unbelievable. And get this, within that marathon game, Shohei Ohtani reached base 9 times.
9 times.
4 hits, 5 walks. I mean, that's something we haven't seen in a postseason game since like 1900.
Wow.
It really speaks to a system pushed way past its normal limits, but still capable of producing these historic, surprising moments.
And that's actually a perfect analogy, isn't it, for what we're seeing in the sources you've pulled together.
Exactly. Just like that game, we're diving deep today into political gridlock, some frankly dizzying financial maneuvers, and the clock is ticking really loudly on all fronts. So our mission here is to give you a shortcut, basically, a way to understand 3 huge complex stories. The pressure points in this government shutdown, the surprising ways the wealthy are using tax shields, and the latest legal dramas playing out in D.C.
It's fascinating because all 3 areas really do show systems being pushed maybe to their absolute breaking point, whether it's time pressure, political standoffs, or, you know, sheer financial ingenuity finding loopholes. We're seeing a lot of 18th innings right now.
Yeah, where one sudden move could just end the game.
Yeah.
For better or worse.
Exactly.
Okay, let's start with the most immediate crisis then. The government shutdown clock. As of tonight, we're entering week 5.
5th week. That puts us just 7 days away from tying the all-time record shutdown length, which was 35 days.
Wow. Okay, so what could actually break this? Our sources point to maybe 4 key pressure points.
That's right. Let's start with the federal workers themselves. The American Federation of Government Employees, the AFGE, they represent 800,000 members.
Ish number.
Massive. And they've called for Congress to reopen the government immediately with what they're calling a clean continuing resolution.
Okay, hang on. For listeners who might not follow all the legislative jargon, what exactly does clean continuing resolution mean here? What makes it clean?
That's crucial, yeah. A clean CR basically just funds the government at the levels it's already at. No policy changes, no strings attached, none of what they call poison pills.
So it just keeps the lights on.
Right. It's like hitting reset. But yeah. The problem is you have hardliners in the House who absolutely refuse to pass anything clean. They want concessions. They see this as their leverage point.
Right. Speaking of concessions, Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, he's proposed a kind of deal, hasn't he?
He has. The idea is pay all the federal workers retroactively for the time they missed.
Okay. That sounds good.
But keep specific language in the bill that affirms the president's right to fire federal workers without cause.
So is that a plausible way out for Democrats? Paychecks now, but giving up that civil service protection?
Well, probably not immediately. Look, the draw of getting paychecks flowing is obviously powerful, very powerful. But Democrats see that language about firing federal workers as essentially a poison pill itself.
Because it changes the balance of power long term.
Exactly. It hands the executive branch this permanent tool to potentially gut the civil service based on politics, not performance. Even if they think courts might overturn firings later, the risk is just seen as too fundamental, too high, just to solve a short-term political jam.
Okay, understood. Now, let's talk military pay. Big deadline coming up, right? Friday payday.
Yes. And the administration announced they covered this next one with a highly controversial donation. $130 million from Timothy Mellon, who's a longtime political donor.
Wait, stop there. Our sources are pretty clear. This is, well, it's against the rules, isn't it?
Right.
Violates the Anti-Deficiency Act. Can you explain why that's not just unusual, but actually illegal?
Yeah, it's really important. The Anti-Deficiency Act basically says public money can only be spent the way Congress specifically authorized it. You can't just accept a huge private donation to cover a core government function, like military pay.
It's an end run around Congress.
It's a direct end run around Congress's power of the purse. And Honestly, it sets a potentially dangerous precedent. Could future presidents just bypass Congress entirely if they find rich donors?
Yeah, that's a worrying thought. And practically speaking, that $130 million, it only works out to at $100 per service member, right?
Barely. It's nowhere near covering a full paycheck.
So it feels less like a real solution and more like, I don't know, political cover to maybe hide where the actual money is coming from.
That's certainly a question being asked. Now, a different pressure point, one that's becoming very visible, is air travel.
Ah, the air traffic controllers.
Exactly. They're essential, so they have to work, but they're not getting paid. And we're seeing reports of them calling in sick at higher rates.
Is that a protest, or are they needing to make money elsewhere, like driving Uber?
Probably a bit of both, frankly. Whatever the reason, the effect is real. We've already seen temporary ground stops or slowdowns at major hubs. LAX, Chicago O'Hare, Newark.
And we're heading straight for Thanksgiving.
The heaviest travel days of the year. If this ATC situation continues or gets worse, we could be looking at massive flight delays, cancellations, millions of travelers affected. It's a collision course.
Okay, then there's maybe the most emotionally charged pressure point. SNAP, food stamps.
Yeah. This Saturday, 42 million people, think about that. That's about 1 in 8 Americans.
Yep.
They're set to lose their benefits completely.
And the administration's stance is that contingency funds can't cover it.
The Secretary of Agriculture says the contingency funds aren't available for the regular monthly cost, which is about $8 billion. Democrats urged him to find a way, but the answer's been no.
That is just staggering leverage.
Absolutely. And you can bet if those benefits lapse, Democrats will use that. They'll wield it like a political hammer next election cycle.
How so?
Well, sources say they're already planning ads. Picture this. Hungry kids versus billionaires. That kind of stark contrast. It's a profoundly effective political message because it brings the consequences of this gridlock right down to the kitchen table.
Okay, we have to talk about the leadership situation, or maybe the lack of it. Speaker Mike Johnson. He's offered several explanations for why this shutdown is dragging on, and they seem, well, they seem to be shifting.
They have been, yes. First, he claimed it was a tactic, you know, to pressure the Senate, even though the House passed that, well, that sort of clean bill, as you called it earlier.
Okay, tell me why.
Then the rationale shifted. He started saying GOP members were back home having meaningful interactions with constituents, and they shouldn't be pulled away from that important work. Mm. But then, here's where it gets, frankly, a bit bizarre. Johnson's latest claim seems to be blaming the shutdown on Zohan Mamdani,
the New York City mayoral candidate.
Yes. Suggesting that far-left activists tied to him are somehow forcing Democrats nationally to demand, I think the term he used was Marxism.
Wait, seriously. We're actually analyzing a claim that a city council candidate in New York is responsible for shutting down the entire federal government.
That is indeed the argument that's being floated and discussed in some circles in Washington right now. It's something.
Wow. Okay. Meanwhile, this whole crisis is raising the stakes incredibly high over in the Senate, isn't it?
Exponentially. You've got senators like Josh Hawley, Rick Scott, Republicans, now openly talking about going nuclear.
Meaning killing the legislative filibuster.
Exactly. And they're citing the SNAP pre-crisis, the potential cutoff, as the reason, the justification for taking such a drastic step.
Now, that is a massive structural change to the Senate. If they actually do it, if they kill the filibuster just to end this shutdown, what's the long-term price?
Oh, the price is potentially enormous for them.
Yeah.
Because the next time Democrats control the House, the Senate, and the White House, the trifecta, guess what?
No filibuster to stop them.
Precisely. They could pass huge legislation, D.C. statehood, maybe changes to the Supreme Court, major voting rights acts with just 51 votes, zero Republican input needed, because the filibuster would already be gone and the GOP would have been the ones to kill it.
It really is robbing Peter to pay Paul, isn't it?
Textbook definition.
Yeah.
A short-term win, potentially creating a massive long-term vulnerability.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's pivot dramatically here. We've seen government systems pushed to the brink by gridlock. Now let's talk about a totally different kind of game being played. This involves the ultra-rich, new tax laws, and how they're shielding fortunes.
Right. This revolves almost entirely around something called bonus depreciation. There's a new law, well, a restoration, really, that brings back the permanent 100% write-off for certain business assets in the first year you buy them.
And that's a big change from how it was working recently.
Huge change. Before this, that benefit was actually shrinking each year. So, for example, if you bought, say, a $10 million private jet this year under the old rules, you might have only gotten a $6 million deduction.
Now, boom. back to the full $10 million deduction 100% right away.
And the market noticed this, I take it.
Instantly. Private jet sales are reportedly way up maybe 30% from the previous year. Brokers are saying they're seeing a huge uptick, especially from American buyers rushing to get deals done before year-end to lock in that 100% deduction.
Okay, so planes make sense as a business asset. But what else qualifies for this 100% write-off? Our sources mentioned some surprising things.
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting. The law applies to commercial assets that have a, quote, short useful life. So yes, planes, specialized factory equipment, but also, surprisingly, structures built mainly for specialized services, like gas stations.
Okay.
And most notably, car washes.
Car washes? Seriously, that seems like a massive loophole. How on earth does a car wash count as a short life asset for 100% write-off?
Well, it's not the building itself, right? That's just standard real estate, depreciates normally over decades. It's the equipment inside the car wash.
Ah, the machinery. Exactly. The super expensive, specialized stuff. The tunnel systems, the sensors, high-pressure water systems, all the complex mechanics, that equipment qualifies for the immediate 100% bonus depreciation.
So it heavily incentivizes building or buying car washes just for the tax break.
It seems that way.
Yeah.
And we actually have a perfect anecdote illustrating this from the sources. An entrepreneur named Mark Johnson. After selling his family business, his accountants basically told him, hey, buy some car washes.
And he did?
Yep. Bought multiple ones in Colorado and Alabama, specifically to avoid paying millions in taxes. He apparently called it a big game.
Wow. Just gaming the tax code. But this isn't free for the country, right? What's the estimated cost?
It's not cheap at all. The estimates suggest this change could cost the IRS something like $363 billion in lost revenue over the next 10 years.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B. And this raises, you know, bigger questions about economic efficiency. Some experts argue this policy is actually pretty inefficient.
Why? Because it distorts investment.
Exactly. It pushes people to pour money into assets like car washes purely because of the tax break, instead of maybe investing in things society arguably needs more, like, say, affordable housing.
So we're actually seeing real estate firms now building these things, car washes, certain types of restaurants, factories specifically, to sell them to wealthy buyers who just want the tax break.
That's what the sources indicate. The market is responding directly to the tax incentive. And the profile of the buyer has changed too. It's not just businesses needing car washes. It's wealthy families, family offices, actively looking for these specific assets just to offset their tax liability. Their primary interest might not even be running a car wash long term.
Okay, that's quite a distortion.
Yeah.
Let's shift to our final section now. We've talked about gridlock. We've talked about tax loopholes. Now let's look at the limits and maybe the bending of executive power, particularly in the legal system and in controlling narratives. We had two, let's just say, controversial pardons this week that kind of got lost in the noise.
They really did. Yeah. Information overload is real. The first one went to former Representative George Santos. He'd been convicted of fraud, admitted it, owed $400,000 in restitution. Trump's pardon wiped out not just the conviction, but also the requirement to pay back that money.
And the justification given.
Well, it basically boiled down to two things, according to sources. First, some whataboutism, you know, comparing Santos's fraud to claims about a Democratic senator. And second, the simple statement that Santos always vote Republican.
Okay.
Yes.
What was the second? The pardon, you called it maybe even sleazier.
Arguably, yes. This went to Changpeng Zhao, known as CZ. He's the founder of Binance, the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange. He got a pardon after pleading guilty to money laundering charges and serving, I think it was 4 months.
Okay, money laundering is serious. What was the White House spin on that pardon?
The official line was basically that CZ was a victim of the Biden administration's supposed war on cryptocurrency and that it was a victimless crime anyway.
But is there more to the story?
Well, here's the context that sources point out. CZ still owned a majority stake in Binance. Binance runs an associated service called PancakeSwap, and PancakeSwap's single largest client. Reportedly, it's the Trump family's financial entity, World Liberty Financial.
So the pardon cleans CZ's record.
Cleans his record, removes legal barriers that might have prevented him from running financial ventures. It certainly raises questions about potential future dealings, especially involving Trump-affiliated cryptocurrencies.
Okay, moving from pardons to the president's health.
Yeah.
Recently, Trump revealed he had an MRI and also took a cognitive test. He bragged about getting perfect results.
Yes, and he mentioned specific questions he found difficult, like repeating a string of numbers 2, 4, 8, 1, 5, I think it was, or explaining what a banana and an orange have in common.
So what kind of test uses questions like that?
Those questions strongly suggest he took what's called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, or MoCA. And here's the key thing. The MoCA isn't an IQ test. It's not designed to measure high intelligence.
Oh, what's it designed for?
It's explicitly designed as a screening tool for cognitive impairment. Dementia, things like that. Getting a score of 26 out of 30, which is generally considered passing, just means not impaired. The questions he cited as difficult are actually standard baseline screening prompts.
So the bragging about acing it is maybe missing the point of the test.
Pretty much. But the bigger ambiguity here, the real question our sources raise, is why these tests were done in the first place.
Right. Neither an MRI nor a cognitive screen like the MoCA is typically part of a routine annual physical,
yeah,
let alone a second physical within just 6 months.
Exactly. Why were they ordered? That remains the critical, unanswered question.
Okay, finally, let's look at where the system might actually be pushing back,
mm-hmm,
holding the line against political pressure, specifically on the Justice Department.
Yeah, it's not all one-way pressure. We know the president has sought indictments against political opponents and sometimes succeeded. But one target, Senator Adam Schiff, who the president has repeatedly attacked, seems relatively safe from a potential mortgage fraud charge the White House was reportedly pushing.
Why is Schiff safe when others weren't? Is there a difference?
There's a crucial jurisdictional difference, according to our sources. The investigation into Schiff falls under the actual U.S. Attorney for Maryland, Kelly Hayes. She's a career prosecutor, not a political appointee in the same way.
And she's resisting the pressure.
It appears so. Hayes and her deputies are reportedly aware the push is politically motivated and are insisting on just calling balls and strikes, applying the law neutrally. And here's the key procedural point. The political appointee who wants the indictment can't legally sign off on charges in Maryland.
Only the U.S. attorney for that district can.
Exactly. Jurisdiction matters. Kelly Hayes holds the authority, and she seems to be using it to uphold the independence of her office against that political pressure.
Interesting. Okay, one last unusual item. This situation with poll watchers in California.
Right. The Department of Justice announced plans to deploy federal monitors, federal poll watchers, to California for the upcoming election.
And the state's reaction.
Immediate pushback. Governor Newsom and the state attorney general instantly announced they would deploy state observers specifically to watch the federal monitors.
So, monitors watching monitors.
Pretty much. It sets up this strange, potentially confrontational dynamic. But it also raises a strategic question. Why would the DOJ announce its plan so far in advance?
Yeah, kipping their hand.
Exactly. It gives the state ample time to prepare and deploy this kind of countermeasure. Tactically, it seems a bit clumsy. It makes you wonder what the real goal was in announcing it so early.
Okay, so wrapping this all up, we've covered a lot. High-stakes government gridlock pushing toward record territory.
Powerful financial incentives basically warping investment decisions towards things like car washes purely for tax breaks.
And these critical legal systems, sometimes bending under intense political pressure, but sometimes, as with U.S. Attorney Hayes, holding firm.
You know, we started this whole deep dive talking about that record-long baseball game, the 18-inning one that ended suddenly with a home run.
Right.
It feels like the political system right now is stuck deep in extra innings,
right,
whether it's the shutdown, these tax games, the legal fights. Something's got to give. The only certainty is that one of these pressure points is likely going to break the current standoff, probably abruptly.
Yeah. So here's maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over as we close out. We have the SNAP crisis potentially affecting 42 million vulnerable Americans, forcing Congress to stare hunger in the face.
A massive human cost.
And then we have this bonus appreciation loophole, mainly benefiting the ultra-rich, but costing the entire nation's tax base an estimated $363 billion.
A massive financial distortion.
So in this environment of information overload, political brinkmanship, which of those two pressure points do you think ultimately forces Congress to act first? The immediate human suffering affecting millions, or the quiet financial distortion benefiting a few but costing billions? Something worth considering.